All right, hello everyone, and welcome back to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host, Chris Platy. Hope everyone is doing well on this week off we've had from basketball. Somehow the Lakers are back in the middle of the story, and they're just dominating the airwaves right now. Somehow in the middle of the finals, even though they didn't even make the playoffs, they're there. But we're not going to talk about that mess. And yes, I say we because I got a brand new guest for the first time on this podcast. Lior Kozai, writer for Def Pen and Raptors Rapture, recently wrote an excellent piece called Toronto Raptors and the Benefit of Caring, which was awesome. Quoted one of my guys, Bill Simmons, in it, which was a really interesting column that I loved from Bill Simmons as well. So first, Lior, how you doing, man? Your Raptors are in the finals. They did it.
I'm doing pretty damn well.
Good. So let's just kind of jump into it because Toronto, and I said this on my podcast when I was talking about the Bucks and the Raptors preview, is that I picked Milwaukee. I picked them in five. I thought that they were going to win the series, and they were going to win pretty easily. Then after game three, I projected that they were going to win out the rest of the series, and boy, was I wrong on that take. But so I just haven't had a good feel for Toronto this year. I've watched their games, and I know they're a great team, but to me, it's just always been the bench slash supporting cast has been up and down, especially within this playoffs. I mean, you talk about Orlando, I was obviously never even worried after day one, even after that shocking loss to the Magic in game one. I was never really worried. And then you get to Philly, and after game one, I'm like, wow, Toronto's going to blow them out of the water in five games. And then it goes all the way to seven, and each game you see the bench and supporting cast just dwindle and dwindle and dwindle until it's eventually Kawhi Leonard at the very end just carrying them and, you know, hitting one of the most incredible shots I've ever seen in my life. And so then we go to Milwaukee. Milwaukee, they look strong to start. Milwaukee takes game one and then takes game two. And then all of a sudden I'm thinking, man, they have no supporting cast, which is why I picked Milwaukee to win that series easily, because I thought that the supporting cast of around Kawhi Leonard was falling apart. So to me, it's been up and down and flaky. Can you kind of break down what's happened in this playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been up and down. Even people who are around the team all the time have kind of had a hard time reading them, and just from the regular season all the way until now, it's a little bit hard to get a feel for them, partly because they just had a lot of like minor injuries, players in and out of the lineup. Obviously, with the load management with Kawhi, right. He missed 22 games. Then there's, I think, Kyle Lowry missed 17 games. And then they made the big deadline move for Marc Gasol, and that took three rotation players out and replaced them with another big rotation player. And then they still had trouble. I always thought Gasol would have made more sense as the starter, and he eventually did end up winning that role, but it took them a little while to get there. So they had, I think, over 20 starting lineups this year or something around that, and they just were always in flux and a little bit out of sorts just in terms of moving lineups around. And they still managed to win a lot because of the talent and kind of the chemistry from the guys from last year, but they did kind of have an up and down regular season despite winning 58 games. And then in the playoffs, yeah, like you said, the bench has been definitely inconsistent, especially Fred VanVleet obviously had one of the biggest shooting slumps of his career for pretty much 15 games, and then suddenly came out firing away after the birth of his son after game four, and then these last three games, game four, five, and six, he was just phenomenal. So they've been up and down, but I think they've kind of established in these playoffs that the team's biggest strength is defensively. They've got a lot of long big defenders at every position. Kind of Kyle Lowry, even though he's a little undersized, is really strong, doesn't really give up ground, and they can just switch a lot of screens. They have elite post defense with Marc Gasol, which may not play much of a factor in the finals, but it's been huge for them in other rounds. And then they kind of have just these elite wing defenders to handle the type of guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo and Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler in past rounds. And then obviously, if Kevin Durant comes back and Klay Thompson, there are a lot of strong wings on the Warriors.
Yeah. Let's get into the matchups of this series, because that, I think, is one of the most fascinating things. So one of the interesting things is, and I don't have the numbers like offhand, but obviously there was a shift after game two where Kawhi spent much more time on Giannis. Now, granted, it was a system built. It was a quote unquote wall. It was the reference they kept using, but that was the kind of system they built to take down Giannis. But Kawhi guarded him, and I can't know off the top of my head how many minutes roughly he guarded him and was the primary defender on him, but that obviously was a big topic because Kawhi is carrying so much on the offensive, and how is he able to guard somebody like Giannis on the defensive end and continue to manage the offensive load in this series? The question to me is, who does Kawhi guard and for how long? Like, I imagine, don't you think that they would kind of rest Kawhi for stretches of the game on Iggy or Alonzo or whoever that extra wing is out there, like Sean Livingston maybe, and try to rest him on there, and then down the stretches of games guard, you know, maybe Curry or Clay or Draymond? What do you think really is going to be Kawhi's defensive assignment in this series?
Yeah, definitely. I'd expect them to give him some like rest, or at least like let him operate as more of an off-ball help defender. He's great in the passing lanes, great at just getting his hands in there and stripping the ball out of when guys are on the drive, and just being a presence there because he kind of has that impact and players know when he's around, either the shot buck or the strip or whatever, they have to be wary of it. So they may hide him on Iguodala to start, or as kind of a secondary thing, I would expect him to be on Draymond a lot, just because Draymond, obviously, you kind of want him to shoot. Yeah, his 3-point percentage kind of goes up and down, but I think they'll probably, if you're picking your poison, you'll probably live with Draymond shooting a lot of threes. So if Kawhi can kind of help off him, and then obviously the Warriors' biggest offensive weapon, at least until Durant comes back, is going to be the Steph Draymond pick and roll. And if you have Kawhi on Draymond, then that kind of blows it up, or at least makes it a lot less effective for the Warriors, just because Kawhi can switch onto Curry, or he can just hedge really well and get back to Draymond. And he really is such an elite defender that it kind of neutralizes that a lot, or at least forces the Warriors to pick a different screener who's kind of less dangerous rolling off of Curry's passes.
Yeah, you brought up a very interesting thing about the Draymond Curry pick and roll. I want to get to that a little bit later, but let's get to some of the other just kind of basic matchups. So I imagine with the backcourt, it'll be Lowry to start on Clay and Green to start on Curry, right?
Yeah, like I expect that, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Lowry on Curry, but probably lean towards Green. It's just kind of depending on what they see or what they feel. But yeah, I mean, I've heard talk from the beat reporters that they might do, they might just play it straight up to start with Curry, with Lowry on Curry. And then if he's kind of struggling or getting tired, then they'll do it. But either way, I could see that happening.
Yeah, that's exactly why I would assume Lowry starts on Clay, just for the energy factor. I mean, both Clay and Curry move a lot, obviously, but Curry is more so involved as far as the movement goes, and that's been a big thing over this last year and a half, right? With Lowry, they've really tapered down his workload on defense for the last couple years now, so. That's why I would assume Lowry's starting on Clay. But yeah, to me, it really doesn't. With Lowry and Green both being good defenders, and Clay and Curry both being great offensive players, to me, I can see it kind of being just a go with the flow.
Yeah, and also Lowry's pretty good at chasing those kind of shooters. He doesn't have the length, obviously, but just getting around screens. He guarded Terrence Ross for like long stretches in the first round, and Evan Fournier. And then in the second round, he was on JJ Redick a lot. So obviously he's used to guarding these shooters coming off a lot of screens off the ball. So I could see him guarding Klay and kind of squeezing around the screens, trying to make it difficult for him to catch with space to shoot.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up, the last thing I wanted to bring up with matchups before we get into some more tactical stuff was with Pascal Siakam. So I imagine he's going to obviously start with Draymond and get the majority of his minutes with Draymond. Do you think this is the best move to have him on Draymond, a guy who's a very smart player who can maybe get him in foul trouble, work him extensively? Do you think that this is the best matchup for Pascal to start, assuming the starting lineups are the starting lineups?
Yeah, probably. I could see, like, again, they switch a lot, right? And they're just kind of these similar size defenders, and pretty comfortable guarding, like, offensive players of different sizes. But, like, that might be his primary matchup. And then just with the screens and with all the Warriors off-ball movement, I could see them doing a lot of switching. But I'd honestly say, like, in the regular season, Siakam was probably their best defender just because Kawhi wasn't really going all out. And he didn't need to, and he was kind of saving himself a bit. And Siakam was just such an impactful defender. So even though he didn't make the all-defense team, but he, yeah, like, I could see him on Draymond, but, like, I could see him on Klay for stretches, just because Siakam is really fast. He gives a lot of length to contest shots. And then some people have even suggested Curry, which might be a little too much of a task for him, but he did do a great job on John Wall in the playoffs last year, and he just guarded Eric Bledsoe for most possessions towards the end of that last series. So I could see him guarding him just because he does keep up with the quick point guards a lot, but obviously Curry is a different type of player than those guys, just in the sense that his shooting is so elite that you can't really compare it to Bledsoe, obviously, where you're sagging off, and the chasing Curry around might be too much for Siakam. So, like you said, long story short, kind of Draymond might be the best matchup to start, at least.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'll be interested to see how he guards somebody like Klay and Curry, especially Curry, because Curry is somebody who really just makes you, if you're a traditional big, and I know Pascal's a bit very modernized big, but still, if you're used to guarding big men 97 to, you know, anywhere from like 97 to like 75% of a game, you know, all of a sudden guarding a guy from 30 feet out, 30 plus feet out, is a very just uncomfortable thing. So it can even just be more of an uncomfortable thing. But you brought up something great that I want to transition into the tactical side of it that I think is super, super important, and I think is one of the strong ace-in-the-hole advantages that Toronto has over mostly any other team in the league when going against Golden State, and that is this Curry-Draymond pick-and-roll with Kevin Durant out has just lit them on fire. And I talked about that on the last podcast, the effects of not having KD, what it does with that pick and roll is it basically gives defenders a comfortability to blitz Draymond or blitz Curry, I mean, on the pick and roll, allowing Draymond to create those scenarios where you see those lobs to Iguodala. But when they have Kevin Durant, they obviously know Kevin Durant's a great shooter, so they're not as willing to risk leaving him. And essentially, it's kind of unlocked a new level of the Warriors' offense, or kind of redefined it. So the big issue with this is Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam guarding Draymond and Curry. Now, I assumed that it would be Kawhi on Curry and Pascal on Draymond, but you brought up an interesting point with putting Kawhi on Draymond because of his inability to shoot, and Kawhi just allowing Draymond to take away those initial dribbles and everything that he does so well is something that's very interesting. I would assume that Kawhi would be on Curry and they'd put Pascal on Draymond to get that switch, because like you talked about, is Pascal is a guy who's pretty good at guarding shifty point guards. So I don't know. I think that's a very, very important matchup.
Yeah, and I mean, just they might go like Kawhi guards Curry in the fourth, but you don't want him to exert all that effort like for 48 minutes.
Right.
Or like if Klay gets hot, like they can always just stick Kawhi on him and just try to shut him down that way and force it to be someone else to beat them. And then and yeah, they feel pretty good about pretty much anyone out of at least the starters, and then probably like Norman Powell and Serge Ibaka sometimes. Just besides Gasol, they feel pretty comfortable switching a lot of it 1 through 5. Like even if Lowry is on Curry and then either Siakam or Kawhi or whoever is on Draymond, like they feel pretty comfortable switching that because they feel good about Kawhi and Siakam stepping out on those shifty guards. And then Lowry is just really stout in the post. And I think the stats, I think it was Aaron Gordon posted up Lowry like 13 possessions or something and was like 2 for 13 in that series. And just big men try to post up Lowry all the time, and Raptors fans kind of laugh about it on Twitter and everything, just because Lowry's post defense has been so like terrific for such a tiny guy all season. And he's great at drawing charges, just being really physical. They kind of let little guys get away with a little more physicality. So if they switch Lowry onto Draymond and he tries to post up Lowry, like the Raptors will take it any day instead of a Steph isolation or something like that. So they feel, I mean, I could see them going with any of these matchups, and just depending on who has it offensively, like what kind of options the Raptors are rolling out for crunch time, especially, they could go with a lot of different options. And that's kind of the strength of their defense, that they have so much versatility and they have so many options and so many different bodies to throw at a guy like Curry and a guy like Klay.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And you brought up something that is also one of my biggest keys that I'm looking for in this series, is how often does Mark play? Because Mark is obviously was super successful in the last series against Milwaukee, but is somebody who, and the series before against Embiid, he wasn't as successful throughout the series, but in totality, the Raptors would not have gotten past that series without Marc Gasol. He's the guy who could physically guard Embiid. So obviously this is a different matchup, right? And so this kind of plays into my thoughts, is that Golden State's obviously going to attack Marc Gasol. They're going to try to attack him every time he's in. So to me, the real question is, how long is Marc Gasol's leash, and should Toronto just quickly pull him and go to small ball, or should they kind of try to play Marc Gasol and Ibaka stuff? Because we've seen the 1 year the Warriors lost in this dynasty era was the year where Cleveland just said, you know what, we're going to have Tristan Thompson get 80 million offensive rebounds and Kevin Love get another 80 million offensive rebounds. Now, Toronto is not as great of an offensive rebounding team. They've been poor in the regular season, and then they've been solid in the playoffs, especially defensively. But the Warriors have been great on the offensive glass. That's another huge advantage to me. But I'm just wondering how much Marc Gasol plays and how quickly they should go small ball. Should Toronto beat Golden State to small ball or play their bigs more?
Yeah, it's definitely a great point, especially bringing up how the Cavs beat Golden State. Yeah, I don't really think the Raptors have that blueprint, just because their bigs are not great offensive rebounds. Like, they've had games where they really got on the glass, like game four against Milwaukee. Like, Serge Ibaka had, I think, 4 offensive rebounds just by himself, and almost out-rebounded Milwaukee by himself on that end. And just they were really attacking the glass, and they have like stretches where they'll dominate inside, but really for the most part they haven't been a great rebounding team. It was one of their biggest weaknesses this year. And I do think, though, in general, people will be surprised by how much Gasol plays. I think people are expecting him to get kind of run off the floor, and I think the Raptors will find ways around that. Just obviously they're going to try to get him switched onto the guards, especially Curry, and try to just attack him in isolation. And if the Raptors keep switching that, then that will be a problem for them, and then Gasol won't be able to play. But I think they'll find ways. Like sometimes Gasol will be stashed. Like, he definitely won't be guarding Draymond Green, but he might be guarding, if the Warriors go small, then he might end up on Iguodala. And the Warriors will use Iguodala as a screener to get Gasol switched. And sometimes when the screener comes up, you can kind of, the Raptors are really good at this, where they kind of communicate while the screener is coming up, they switch it before the screener gets there. So they switch off the ball, and then you get like Siakam or Kawhi onto Iguodala. And then if Iguodala is the screener, then they can switch onto Curry, or they can just find a way to guard that with two guards instead of having Gasol end up in this pick and roll where he's a little bit slow footed. And that's kind of his biggest weakness as a defender, because he just doesn't have the foot speed to keep up with guards like that. So I think he'll have to be more effective on offense than he was at times in the Milwaukee series and against Philadelphia. He'll definitely need to look for his offense, Marcus Ola and Ibaka also when he's on the floor. But I think both of them can kind of do enough to find ways to stay on the floor, and they'll be more effective than a guy like Enes Kanter or whoever else is getting run off the floor. Like Capella had a really tough series against Golden State. So definitely I would expect them to go small for stretches. And I love the look with Siakam at center. I was kind of surprised they didn't go to it against Milwaukee, especially with Giannis playing some center. But I do think the big men can hang, and they're not going to play together, Gasol and Ibaka, but they are going to play at least one of them for, I would expect, like over 40 minutes between the two of them per game.
Yeah, I agree. I think that coming into it, I was like, okay, this is obviously going to be something that's very important and very defining in Toronto's success in this series is their bigs. That's always going to be a big factor with Golden State, and how they like to play is how well can your bigs match up with Golden State. And I agree with you. I think the answer is you give Mark a long leash, you play him. He has to be effective, though. He definitely has to be effective on offense. And he is a great overall defender, because he knows positions very well. He's smart. He's, like you said, his only flaw is really is his footing on defense, and that he's not quick enough to keep up with Steph Curry, who most guards can't even keep up with. So he's not by any means a terrible defender. He's still a good presence at the rim, obviously. A high IQ player. So yeah, I believe defense, yes, post defense as well. So I believe that Marc Gasol is crucial in this series, and I believe that Toronto, while they will go small for stretches, I don't think they should be in a rush to play Golden State that way, because that's the way Golden State loves to play. The last thing I wanted to bring up is that the rebounding overall. So like I said, Toronto has been great. They're a top five rebounding team in the playoffs, offensive rebounding wise, they have struggled. The Warriors have been great on both ends of the glass, particularly the offensive end, where they are in the upper half of the playoffs as far as offensive rebounds. They absolutely crushed the Rockets in that series with offensive rebounds. So that being said, I believe that it's very crucial for Toronto to have a great rebounding series, and to do that, they have to play their bigs, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it will be tough, kind of, because they don't love like throwing a lot of guys to the glass, just because they're worried a lot about transition. Like the last two teams they played, just looking at Philly and Milwaukee, you're looking at two teams that thrive in transition, especially with Ben Simmons, Giannis pushing the ball. And then Golden State kind of thrives, but in the opposite way. Instead of getting to the rim with those big, like long slashing guys, they have Curry and Thompson, and they get all the threes in transition. So I think they'll be a little reluctant to go too far into the offensive glass, but I think they'll kind of play it by ear and kind of see if Gasol can get to the glass, if Ibaka can get to the glass, either for games or for stretches in games, then they'll definitely try to exploit that advantage. And Kawhi was fantastic on the glass, especially in game six against Milwaukee. We just saw it where he got 17 rebounds, and he was just a force And you can kind of like at least try to exploit that. And then if you're getting burned in transition, and if you really, if it's just not working out, if they're not able to get those rebounds, then you can always just send all five back or send four guys back and then try to protect transition the other way. So yeah, it's kind of about finding that balance, right?
Yeah, definitely about finding the balance. That's going to be the key with Toronto. Overall, is there as far as like closing words, is there one other thing, anything else that you see as particularly important in this series from a Toronto Raptors perspective?
Yeah, definitely just not hesitating to shoot. They had a lot of those difficulties against Philadelphia and kind of in the
Yes.
first two games against Milwaukee, where their shooters were just reluctant, whether it was like Gasol and Ibaka as the bigs or just any of the kind of role-playing guards, Danny Green, Van Vliet, and Powell. And they were just a bit reluctant to shoot, especially against the length of Philly, the length of Milwaukee. And Golden State's a team with a lot of long defenders as well. You have Klay Thompson, Draymond, Iguodala. Livingston hasn't played a ton in these playoffs, but he's still, if he's on the floor, he's a pretty long, better defender. So they kind of need to just fire away. I think Golden State's going to sell out a ton on Kawhi. They're going to put a ton of pressure on him and throw a lot of help at him, and they're going to make the role players and the shooters beat them. And if those guys are just not hesitant and they're just shooting their threes, Van Vliet and Powell especially got hot last series, but Danny Green has been struggling all playoffs long. If those guys can start hitting shots and not being afraid to shoot them, then it could be a different series, because I do expect the Raptors defense to do decently well. Obviously, Golden State's going to get theirs just because they're such an incredible offensive team. But I think the other end will kind of be where they make or break the series, where the Raptors have to find enough offense to kind of hang with the Warriors.
Yeah, very good point. And if I could give you any reassurance, because I don't think I told you this before, the little bit we talked before we got on air, but I myself am part Canadian. For those of you that don't know, in the podcast, my mother's side of the family is from Canada. My mother moved from Canada to Michigan when she was 3 years old. So I am partly Canadian, and I am embracing that part of Canada. So the optimism I can give you is that Danny Green was killer in the finals for San Antonio. So the
Oh,
last time Danny Green was in a finals, things worked out pretty well for him.
of
So
course.
that's something to look forward
Yeah,
to.
I was kind of joking about it. Like, there are 82 game players, like, you know what Draymond said, that kind of everyone's been repeating lately. Like, there are 82 game players and there are 16 game players. Well, Danny Green is just a finals player. So
Yeah.
hopefully he gets a stroke back for that series.
Yeah, hopefully, man. Thank you, Leo, for coming on the podcast. Once again, that's Leo from Def Pen and Raptors Rapture. Again, your piece, Toronto Raptors and the Benefit of Carrying, brought out the Canadian pride that's still within me. So it was a great read. Do you have anything else you'd like to plug?
Not really. I've been covering the Raptors all playoffs pretty much. So you can find my work, like where you said, Def Pen and Raptors Rapture. And yeah, I just wrote kind of about what Game 6 and the Raptors finals run meant to me as a fan, and kind of to the city as kind of a tortured fan base that finally got something, such a great like moment for us. And yeah, I'll probably have something else up before the finals start on Thursday. So yeah, it's an exciting time to be a Raptors
What a time to be alive, as your boy would say, as your boy
fan.
Drake would say.
Yep.
All right, thank you for that, Lior. Now we're going to jump to the Golden State Warriors side of the podcast, where I have a special writer joining me to break down everything Golden State. Hey, everyone. So unfortunately, due to a scheduling emergency, the writer that was going to be on the Golden State side of the podcast cannot make this, so I am doing this part of the podcast solo, because I figured I wanted to get this out to you before the NBA Finals started, and I also didn't want to just put out a Raptor side and not cover a Warrior side. So I kind of scrambled and looked for guests, and I couldn't find anyone. So ultimately, I decided to just do the Golden State side of the podcast myself. So on this side, I'll be focusing on everything from a Golden State perspective, what they have to do to win, and then of course I'll end it with my final prediction and where I see this series going. So without further ado, I'm going to toss it to the other side of the podcast. Enjoy. All right, everyone, let's jump into the Golden State side of this podcast. Now, once again, this is all going to be from the Warriors' perspective, like the last side was from the Toronto Raptors' perspective, and we're just going to kind of dive deep in this series. Everything, the stuff that we talked about on the last portion of the podcast with rotations, matchup, tactical advantages, all that stuff we're going to dive to, but now we're diving into it through the Warriors' prism. So the first place we'll start with the rotation. Toronto, we know where they're going to go, what their eight is going to be. They're going to have a clear eight-man rotation, which is going to be their five starters, of course, and then the three players off the bench that will play in this series are Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, and Ibaka, unless things go crazy. But that's going to be the eight that they will consistently play and that they'll trust the most in this series. Now, Golden State actually has some options. They can do things a little bit different. With a guy like Marc Gasol on the Toronto Raptors, the Golden State Warriors can actually do some interesting things where they can play Bogut a little bit more. This is not a series where Bogut's going to get played off the floor until Toronto goes super small, unless they continuously attack him in the pick and rolls and he just can't hang. But having a guy like Marc Gasol out there, Bogut's going to be a nice kind of counter to Marc Gasol, I think. So that's a nice thing that the Warriors have. This will be the first time really in the playoffs that the Warriors have had Bogut as kind of an ace in their hole type situation. And by the way, now DeMarcus Cousins obviously could see minutes in the rotation as well. We know Steve Kerr likes to play quite a bit of guys, so it would not surprise me if this rotation goes, I expect it to go 9, but it could go as deep as 10 in some games, or some games even 11. We'll get somebody on the bench will get like three minutes. But let's talk about the matchup. So one of the most interesting things with Golden State is DeMarcus Cousins, who's now been activated for game one. There's no set. There's no information out there as of right now, as of this recording, of when or how much Boogie will play, if there's any type of limits on him, all of that, if he's going to start, come off the bench, whatever. We just know that he's active for game one at this moment. So the interesting thing is, what do you do with DeMarcus Cousins? Clearly a talented player, but also had some struggles. He's had some great moments for the Warriors this season, but he's also had some struggles, especially defensively. And so I think what I would do with DeMarcus Cousins, who's never been on the stage, I would play him with the bench unit and I would say, look, what we're going to do is we're going to play you in these small, or not these small lineups, these bench lineups where we take Curry and Draymond out and you are just the focal point of the offense and you're just going to give us, you know, those 8 minutes or 6 minutes of just hard fought, every play down the floor is run through you in the post, do your thing, just eat, you know. And I think that's the best way to just kind of like unleash him in short bursts. I think that's the best thing for Boogie. It gets him enough touches to where he feels involved, and also it's not too strenuous on his body, considering he is just coming back from two rough injuries now. First the Achilles and now the quad. Those are two tough injuries to come back from. And to have them on top of each other is a really, really tough thing to come back from. So that would be my choice for how to handle the Boogie situation, because it is a very tough situation with the all-star player coming back from two tough injuries on top of each other. But again, we'll see how it plays out. Maybe if he has success with that bench run, you can get him more minutes and work him into starting lineup. Or if things just go absolutely haywire and you got to start trying new things, then you got to break out Boogie and maybe play him more extensive minutes and see what he can give you on a consistent minute basis. The next matchup that's interesting is Draymond will play Pascal. I think that's very important because that allows Draymond to free safety, because Pascal is going to get the Draymond Green treatment from downtown. He can shoot, but they're going to use him as somebody who just, if that's a person who beats you by threes, then so be it. And this will also help because Iguodala will obviously be guarding Kawhi for extensive periods of time in this series, and Draymond being allowed to free safety will really help. I imagine that's where quite a bit of the doubles are going to come from in this series, at least to start. If Danny Green doesn't break his slump, then I think the Warriors will start to send Klay. And then if Marc Gasol is not being aggressive with his shot, they could send, you know, they could send Bogut. They could send a lot of different options when it comes to doubling Kawhi in this series, which obviously will be something that happens throughout this series. Kawhi will have at least two people pretty much on him every play. The next matchup that's very interesting, and the last one that's really interesting, especially when it comes to starters, is you stick Curry on Green because of how physical Lowry is. That would be my preference if I'm the Golden State Warriors. Green has been in a shooting slump too, and he doesn't do too much off the dribble, so Curry would just have to kind of chase Green, but even Green, for somebody who moves off ball and scores off ball, he's not one of those people, like, and I guess I'm spoiled by what the Warriors do, but with Steph and Klay, it feels like those guys run a lot more than Danny Green does, and I don't actually have any type of advanced analytics to prove that. That's just kind of what my eye test feels like, is like Draymond Green is not running around extensively like, you know, J.J. Redick or Steph Curry or Klay, at least I feel personally. But that being said, I like sticking Curry on Green and Klay on Lowry, because Lowry's a physical, tough mentality guard. So sticking somebody like Klay on Lowry, who can be just as physical with him, is going to really, really help. And Klay is just as shifty as Lowry as far as his lateral quickness. So I think Klay's also just straight up the better defender. So sticking him on Lowry is probably the better option for the Warriors, I would imagine. But it'll be interesting to see if Danny Green continues to slump, if Steph Curry starts to be somebody who helps off. I'm really, really curious from a Golden State perspective, because obviously we talked about earlier, like, Kawhi's going to get doubled. He's going to get doubled several times. I don't imagine they'll double too much with Bogut when Bogut's in, just because Bogut's not somebody who can move actively. So I imagine when I said Bogut, I kind of meant more so whoever the center is when Draymond's not center. I imagine a Kevon Looney double teaming more than I imagine a Bogut. But as far as like if Danny Green is still shooting as poorly as he shot, and he has shot very, very poorly in this playoffs, if he continues to shoot that poor, I'm curious to see if Curry is going to start gambling, because Curry is the weakest defender on a great defensive team. So he's still a really good defender. I mean, maybe not really good. Maybe really good is too big of a stretch, but as far as like one-on-one defense, like, he tries, he's competitive, he's not a liability by any shape. I'd call him an above average defender personally. He does make these great swipes at the ball, but sometimes, a lot of times, he'll make the dumb swipes at the ball too, which will get him fouls and get him in foul trouble, and that's something to look out for in this series. Because Curry's obviously, with Durant out, he's the clear number one option, so he cannot get himself into foul trouble. But not to get off on that tangent, Curry defensively has this way of like playing the passing lanes pretty well, and also kind of poking at loose balls. So I could see if Danny Green continues to slump, I'd be really interested to see if the Warriors say, all right, this guy who's an historically great shooter, but also in a historically bad slump, we're just going to abandon him and somebody quick like Curry could send a nice surprise blitz double team that could kind of catch Kawhi off guard. So that's something to keep in the back pocket. I'm really interested to see what they'll do with that. But I imagine most times the double will come from somebody like Draymond, who can play kind of free safety because of Pascal's inconsistent shooting. Now let's jump to the tactical side of this, the side that's going to really dictate how this series will go. And this is one of the biggest things. It's a simple thing, but it's one of the biggest things to me, and that's rebounding. Rebounding is going to be a big difference in this series. Golden State has done a solid job on both sides of the floor. Well, Toronto's done a good job protecting against offensive rebounds. They're a top five defensive rebounding team in the playoffs, so they've done pretty well. But Golden State, the last two series, especially in the Houston series, they killed the glass, and that's just something you can't do. Against a historically great team, a historically great offense, maybe the greatest offense ever, you just cannot give this team more three-pointers. Just more possessions, which will essentially lead to more threes. So you get the idea. But you can't give this team more possessions, man. They're just too good. So that's going to be a problem. And Toronto has struggled with rebounding. Now, they did pretty well in the series against Milwaukee. I wouldn't say they did fantastic, but they did pretty well. And they had stretches. Again, they don't get offensive rebounds. That's not really their thing. But defensively, they've been consistently solid throughout the playoffs. And if they can just, even just take away the extra possessions that Golden State will get, you know, because Golden State will have in this series, they'll have that one game where they turn the ball over like crazy. Because Golden State, that has been their only flaw in their entire run, is their ability to turn over. And their rebounding. But the biggest thing has always been their turnover ability, or their proneness to turnovers. So I don't even know if I use that right, but you get what I'm saying. They have a high turnover rate, and that's been the biggest problem with them. So anyways, with that being said, these turnovers are very, very costly, and one of the ways they try to make up for them is these offensive rebounds. And if you're protecting the offensive rebounds and they have a game where they're turning over, all of a sudden that's a game that I would strongly take. If Toronto has a big advantage in turnovers and rebounding, I would strongly assume that Toronto is going to win that game, just because you're all of a sudden giving a great offensive team, so don't get me wrong, they could still win that game, but you're giving them less possessions and they're shooting maybe 10 less shots or 12 less shots than the Raptors. And if you give the Raptors 12 more possessions in a game, that's enough, definitely enough to swing in favor of the Raptors. So that's something to keep an eye on. But again, the interesting thing is Toronto's not a team that's going to punish the Warriors. Now, the Warriors, like I said, have done a solid job rebounding, but they've seen in the playoffs, the only time they've lost is to Cleveland, and Cleveland absolutely dominated and abused them and sold out on the offensive glass. And so, as of right now, in this five-year Warrior run, the only way they've been beaten is by being punished on the glass. In OKC was punishing them on the glass. And I could see the same thing happening in this series. If Toronto wants to win, they have to get offensive rebounds. That is a must. You gotta extend your possessions and limit theirs, because they are so efficient at scoring that you just can't give them. If Golden State and Toronto have the same amount of shots, I'm most likely taking, without seeing the final score, I'm most likely taking it to the bank that Golden State is winning that game, just because of how great they are offensively. So you have to create more possessions in this game. And Toronto has to do that by doing things like getting offensive rebounds, or creating turnovers, or limiting Golden State's offensive rebounds. So that's a big key. And the last big key I want to see in this series, the last thing that I think is extremely, extremely important, is Marc Gasol and just the factor he plays. Now, I talked a lot about this on the previous side of the podcast, Marc Gasol's just impact for Toronto, necessity for Toronto to win. But for Golden State to win, I think if they could play Gasol off the floor, man, it's going to be very, very difficult. Because I think Toronto, and this is why I have Golden State Warriors in six, is because Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry, and Kawhi Leonard have to play great every game in order for them to win. If one of those three guys is not playing great in a game, any particular game, then all of a sudden that game is heavily in favor of the Warriors. So the Warriors are definitely, of course you've heard this a million times, they have the strong margin of error, right? They have the greatest margin of error ever. So it's very, very tough to, it's very tough to beat them because you have to have the smallest margin of error. And if you have anything bigger than that, Golden State is going to blow it wide open and you're going to lose by 15 somehow, some way. So I want the Warriors, if I'm the Warriors, I want to attack Gasol. I want to attack him early in the series, make him uncomfortable in game one. I want him in halftime of game one, I want Marc Gasol to be sitting in his locker room thinking, oh man, this is going to be a long series. Because you know what? In the last round, two rounds ago, Philly did that. And there were stretches where Marc Gasol looked like, oh my God, you can't play this guy. And then of course he got his shot and he kind of stepped it up. And obviously we know how that story goes. Toronto is now here in the finals. But with that being said, Marc Gasol is somebody who, like anybody else, is susceptible to confidence issues, especially when you haven't been in this scenario. So if you're on this stage and if game one, they do a lot of pick and rolls and they just get switches onto Gasol and Curry eats him alive and has like 35 in a game one and Golden State wins by like double digits, like 12, let's say. All of a sudden, Gasol's going to be sitting there like, damn, this is going to be tough. And if you could just rattle him enough, you take out Gasol out of this series, and all of a sudden, not only do Kyle Lowry and Kawhi have to be spectacular, but you also have to have a bunch of contributions from Norman Powell, Serge Ibaka, all that stuff. Serge Ibaka's got to play extensive minutes, all of that. So you really make life difficult for Toronto if you take Gasol out of this series. So that's the biggest key from the Warriors' perspective. So again, if the Warriors want to win, Golden State has to control the glass. They have to get extra possessions just to make up for their turnovers. And the flip side of that is maybe they don't. If they don't turn the ball over, then they don't have to rebound as well. But Toronto's going to be a tough matchup. I really think Toronto's going to be a tough matchup. Kawhi is just an absolute animal right now. He's having an all-time great postseason, something just honestly so spectacular that we really don't ever see outside of a few years from a few players and a few great moments. So this has been an incredible series, and this is going to be one of the toughest players Golden State has faced in their entire five-year run. Obviously, with LeBron and ironically Kevin Durant up there, Kawhi is right up there in that all-time great echelon. Something that you have to really, really watch out for in this playoffs. So I imagine Golden State is going to be doing a lot of double team. That being said, I picked Milwaukee to win in five in last round. So clearly, I was not only wrong, but I was super wrong with that series. But I'm picking Golden State for the same reason I picked against Toronto in the last round. I don't trust this bench. Fred VanVleet is shooting out of his mind right now. He is playing unbelievably well. Serge Ibaka comes and goes, and in this series, Marc Gasol comes and goes, and Kyle Lowry comes and goes. Kyle Lowry's been probably the most consistent, actually, so I won't say that about him. But Danny Green has not even come. He's just gone. He's just gone. He's off on an island somewhere doing Lord knows what, because his head is just not in these games right now. As far as his shots, he's just not hitting anything. So that is the reason I will pick Golden State, is because you have to have everything on point consistently all the time in order to beat Golden State. And I just don't see them doing that. So that being said, I have Golden State in six. Once again, everyone, I apologize for my guests not being able to make it. It was a last-minute scheduling emergency came up, and it made it too difficult. And I wanted to make sure this podcast got to you before game one of the finals. So that's why I kind of just decided to do this part myself anyways. So I'm sorry if you were looking forward to having somebody else to banter with on Golden State side. I myself was also looking forward to it. You know how I do on the Strictly Hip Hop and Strictly Hoop Talk podcast. I like to give other voices. I don't like to just give myself. So doing a solo side on this podcast felt a little different, felt a little unique. Something I did at Sports Radio Detroit. Shout out Sports Radio Detroit for that. I did that a couple times throughout the year last year or this year. And it's been fantastic. But bringing it to the Strictly Hip Hop and Strictly Hoop Talk realm of podcasting was something different. So I hope you all enjoyed it. Once again, follow me on all of the social medias at Real Chris Platy. That's C-H-R-I-S-P-L-A-T-T-E. And if you don't know how to spell real, don't follow. Once again, I do want to thank my guest on the Toronto Raptors side, Lior Kozai. He was absolutely awesome. And the content he gave was phenomenal. I really, really enjoyed that conversation. Check out his work at Def Pen and Raptors Rapture. And this is going to be a great series, everyone. So stay tuned. I'm going to be coming back probably after game two, I would say. So again, Apple, Spotify, wherever you consume your podcast, you can find this Strictly Hip Hop and Strictly Hoop Talk. I'm Chris Platy. Have a great night, everybody, and enjoy the NBA Finals. They are finally here.